What's up, y'all? It's your girl KC and my loving hubby CL, aka the Southern Drawled Angelino, aka Cold Chris, aka
Cold Chris.
I thought that was one of your names. One of your BKAs.
Well, I am ice cold.
Exactly. Ice cold, Chris. And it is Thursday night. It is past my bedtime. But we wanted to check in with y'all, family. And you might get a little silliness from me because when it's past my bedtime, it's all bad. we wanted to start off this episode of The Break, which you're going to get with the two of us and our brother KJ from Welcome to the Village, going over a little listener feedback. Last few weeks, we've gotten a fair amount of feedback, and we just wanted to respond to some of it. So shout out to Inglewood Triz for Real Topics, Real People. And Triz is one of our folks. He said the uniqueness of this show is you get a perspective from multiple angles from people belonging to different walks of life. Included in that are the opinions of genuine folks without political gain or corporate sponsors influencing the commentary. Thank you, Triz. We appreciate that.
Man, thank you.
Yeah, we definitely try to keep it real around here.
Yeah.
Special shout out to Queen Neen from the In Deep Show. She says, are you listening? I am such a fan of this show. I love how KC and Chris discuss a myriad of topics, from marriage to Kanye to the Black experience. If you are not listening to this show, you need to start. You will definitely learn something new. Thank you, Queen. We appreciate you for listening and for supporting us. Bree Walker said, love the shows. Very informative. Black Is podcasts provide both engaging and intriguing dialogue. I'm always kept up to date on the most current issues and topics concerning the African-American community. A must listen. You'll be hooked. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We appreciate it. Shout out to Fly Girl. She says, thank you. I love Black Is for the refreshing content that is a true reflection of my Black experience. That's what's up.
That's real.
Yeah. That's what we're trying to do, is provide everybody's Black experience. And we know we have not touched on every type of Black person, but we're striving to.
Yeah, we're trying to reach as many as possible.
Yeah, we're striving to. You want to take a few?
Sure.
Okay.
We got if I'm reading it right, Jamfar. I love their shows. I find myself having an ongoing conversation with the commentators. Appreciate that.
Yes. Yes, yes. We've heard people tell us they sometimes are shouting at the whatever device they're listening to. I remember Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips. She said, every time you guys get into a conversation, I'm always talking back, wishing I could jump into conversation. So we love that.
From Munches, great content. I love all the different podcasts offered from Black Ears with really solid content. Thank you for that.
Yes.
That's what we strive to do.
Thank you so much.
Juan P., great show. I love how informative these episodes are while still keeping it funny. Thank you, Juan P.
Yes.
And Mr. CEO, amazing. I love Black Ears. This is one of the best podcasts online. Highly stimulating.
That's family right there. Thank you, CEO.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
We appreciate the shout. And so, yeah, we appreciate all feedback. It means the most to us to hear what people are thinking and feeling about our work. And it lets us know to keep going when we know people are actually listening.
Oh, yeah, man. We love it. We always asking for more. So please let us know what your thoughts are. The shows you enjoy, the topics you enjoy, if you want to chime in on the topics, if you want to send us topics that you would like to hear.
Yes.
Us do on the roundtable or any of the shows, let us know.
Yes.
I also got one on iTunes from Xavier Savant.
All right.
Can't wait until the next episode.
That's what's up.
Hold up.
And we also got a request from one of our really consistent supporters, and we appreciate this brother so much, Mr. Bertram Ash. He sent us a link about this documentary called American Promise that came on, was that PBS?
PBS, yeah.
Yeah, it was a PBS documentary. And this particular episode focused on two boys in New York who were attending a private school. Do you remember the name of the school, baby?
Of course, and I watched the whole thing.
I know. I got so into what I was paying attention to, and now it's been a minute. No. I don't remember the name of the school. But
it was one of the top private schools in the country.
Right. And it was interesting because what happened was that their parents decided to document this experience from the time they start the school, which is kindergarten, through their high school graduation. Yeah. They didn't stay at the same school.
One of them finished all the way through. The other one got through to eighth grade
and then went to a
public school for high school, but they still caught his, when he was going through high school.
Yeah.
It was really good.
I mean, very interesting.
You kind of get, it starts off feeling like, okay, maybe I should send my son to a private school with all they can offer. But I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's real heavy. I mean, you kind of see the plus and minuses. You get to see how the parents deal with all of this, with just all the extra work. And, you think you're going to a private school, so they have everything. But of course, all these parents are actually paying extra money for tutoring.
Right.
So off the 25 G's you dropping, now you got to pay an extra 10, 15, even 30,000 for tutoring. You're like, are you serious?
Yeah. And what was interesting, because, Chris and I have a child that's finishing up his kindergarten year. And thinking about it from our experience in terms of trying to find the right public school for him, because his preschool education was private. And we've had moments, and we still have moments, because we get frustrated with, the California public school system, where I say to Chris, the moment the money is looking different, we gonna put him in private. But what this documentary exposed was the challenges of being a young black man in a private school setting and the perception others have of you, even though we know that this exists. You know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't something that's new to the game at all. But seeing how children with different backgrounds bring their families or their parents' perception to the school, and how the child who's in the position of being a minority ethnically in the situation is somewhat at a disadvantage. You have to really build your child. What I walked away from this documentary was, but you really have to give your child a super duper strong foundation and sense of self, and sense of self in regard to not only just who they are personally, but as far as their culture and ethnicity is concerned, because that's how they will be judged a lot of the time from people.
Yeah, it was really shocking to see. You get to see a point where the black parents get some of the, they sit down with some other black parents at the school, kind of just figuring out, what are they dealing with. And one of the parents was like, it's funny, it's like, we talked to the white parents, and they're going through the exact same thing. You're like, oh, I got to stay up till like midnight because my kid has a report due. Oh, no, my son left his homework at the school, and now he got to go get it. And I mean, they deal with the same things, but they all did say there's some extra layer that their black kids, especially the black boys, have to deal with.
Yeah. And the pressure.
Yeah.
The pressure really seemed to be something extreme in regard to what we were seeing on the children. Like, there was one scene fairly early on where one of the young men, he had been working on a project apparently for weeks, and it was due the next day or over the weekend or whatever. And he had left something critical that he needed to complete it at school. And not only was he beating up on himself, like just kind of fell down into an immediate deep depression, but his parents were going off on him too.
Yeah. And you feel like the parents are pushing the kid because they want to see him succeed, which is why they put him in the school. But they're just on him all the time, and you're like, wow. Yeah. Are they even? And I don't think they were conscious of this until they watched it all.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I feel terrible discussing this with not having the students, the children's names or the name of the school. But the one young man, the fair complected one.
That's Idris.
Idris. That's what it was. Idris. They had a different pronunciation on it. from the one that we're familiar with. With that young man, Idris, his father had an interesting method of parenting. Chris and I both had moments of conflict with that. His father was somebody who I perceived, like, he loves his child, but he's definitely like tough love. Like, they show a scene where the boy is playing, because it's interesting, his parents are sending him to this private school that's predominantly not black, and then on the weekends he's part of this basketball league.
Yeah, for one of his years, because he grew up he's enjoyed basketball, so he played basketball at the school,
right?
And you know, because this is something he wanted to do, you know, his parents put him in, you know, little leagues as a young kid, and he's playing with, and this was like with the Ron Artest out in Queens. And right. You know how old this is.
Right.
You don't, you know, change his name and everything.
Right.
And he's playing and he's talking about some of the kids make fun of him because of the way that he talks and basically because he doesn't use slang. And he was kind of calling it slangish.
Right.
You know, like, because I'm not using slang. So he was like, you know, I'm changing my voice and go deeper and, yo, what's up and all that. And he was like, I tell my parents, like, yeah, I don't know that I'm doing that.
Right.
You know, but actually I am, because I don't feel like getting made fun of. And
right.
When I'm at my school, I don't have to do that. I can just be myself.
Yeah. And he actually made the point while he got to the end of the game, because the kids who play with him tell him he doesn't sound black enough. He mentioned that he feels more comfortable at the school just based off of his voice. Nobody tells him he doesn't sound black enough, you know, which it is. It brought me to the point where I was thinking about a conversation I was having. And this is completely switching lanes, but Pharrell's album cover for his new album Girl, and the flurry of anger it sparked from people about him not having someone on the album cover who at first glance was clearly black. And I feel like we need, as a people, to have a conversation as to what are these parameters? Why do we have them? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we constitute being black enough to mean? How do you clarify that? How do you define it? You know what I mean? So if I'm somebody with two black parents who grew up in the suburbs attending predominantly white schools, but I don't use slang very often, but I'm aware of my history, mm-hmm. and who I am. But because I communicate differently, does my communication style impact my blackness in regards to how I'm received? Because it's not so much self-perception, but outward perception,
yeah.
Which I think sometimes can shape self-perception.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
What I mean?
Hey, we know we're going to bring that to the table.
Right. And so anyway, I thought about that with this little boy, and I just, everything in me wanted to reach through the screen and hug them both. Because it just seemed like the private school experience, which was supposed to, because in the beginning of it, for both parents, this was the understanding of going to the school is basically going to set them on the path for success. Mm-hmm. Like, this is done. Right. This is guaranteed.
Give them some tools that they probably wouldn't get at a normal school.
And right.
You know, of course, if I'm sending my son to this expensive school, then clearly by the time he's a senior, he'll be going to an Ivy League and getting the best jobs and all of that.
Right. Getting scholarships and whatnot. But it seemed like it was more of a stress on the boys.
That's funny. I wrote a note. So the school is called, it's Dalton.
Thank you. The Dalton School.
I took notes on that. School said he talks out of turn, made fun of because he doesn't speak slang. At one point, they were recommended tutoring in fourth grade by the school. And he and his friend, the other kid's name is Sean. Come to find out, the parents found out that even though the school was saying, oh, there's a lot of kids in his class who go through this tutoring, she found out that basically it's only them two who are getting the tutoring.
Right.
Which is like, up.
Oh. Right.
You know, parents have him on a schedule at one point. This is for Idris. You know, like, oh, well, he's not doing well, so we're going to basically have him on a schedule, less video game time, less ball time, more work time, which is cold.
Yeah, and that's the point that I'm meant to make when I was talking about little Idris, his father's parenting. When he left that basketball game and he didn't do that well. Like, okay, I get this idea that we, because I don't agree that we should have a culture when it comes to athletics specifically where everybody is a winner. That defeats the purpose of competitive sports. Yes. There has to be a loser. So we don't need to pump kids up and tell them, give everybody an award for participation, because that's not what this is about. You want kids to learn how to be competitive in sports. They have to lose every now and again. That's how they develop that, you know, that spirit of, mm-hmm. of competitiveness. But his father was cold. He was just like, y'all are losers. Y'all look terrible. Was, like, just face it.
It was cold because it was like he was still probably
what,
elementary
six,
school.
Seven?
Yeah,
he was a little kid.
He played well. I mean, you know, his team lost by a point. You know, he's crying because that's how you know how young he is.
Yeah.
You know, of course, he's, you know, his mom is hugging him. The dad's like, "Why don't you get off him?" And he says, "You got to play horrible." And he's like, "What do you mean? Why are you calling us horrible?"
He's
and
so he's
like,
hurt.
"I didn't say you were horrible. What do you say?" I said, "You guys played horrible."
He was so hurt.
You like that? And this that was like a trend
mm-hmm.
with his father.
Mm-hmm.
It was always he's. You see him as he gets older, mm-hmm. and he's like his dad is always saying that kind of stuff. And you can see him slowly kind of like, ugh, here it go.
Right. Like, I'm tired
here
of this.
Here it come. Yeah, you're going to tell
really
me
I'm tired of this.
I'm sucking and I'm not doing well. And his dad has moments throughout the, as he gets old and throughout where he's trying to like, look, this is why I'm doing this. This is for, you know, you need to do better. This is the reason why you got to do better. But I think his parents were so harsh on him.
Yeah.
And he struggled.
Yeah.
You know, he said the school felt he had ADHD early on.
Yeah.
And his parents were like, no, he don't. I'm a psychologist. He don't have it. Come to find out about 10th, 11th grade, he is tested and he is diagnosed ADHD. It actually mentions that one of his friends, he wanted it to drug because he's like, well, his friend was struggling in school, took a little medicine, and now he's doing better. And maybe I need that.
But you know what? Can I say this? Now, this is me. Being an educator for two different generations of children at this point, I struggle with the idea of medicating kids for the sake of controlling them. Because I've seen what a child looks like that is on one of those, you know, behavioral disorder medications.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could deal with it more if this were a medication that didn't act like a sedative. Because basically, you give a kid that is diagnosed ADHD, just hyperactivity, you're basically giving them a for real deal chill pill.
Right.
And when I say chill, I mean all the way chill. As where that child might be turned up in your class every other day, starting ruckus, you put them on this medication, they are crashed. Cat Williams, when he did that little joke about how his son was running and just stopped in the middle of the run and fell down to the ground like he couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That's exactly what it is. They just check out. And for me, that defeats the purpose because that does not all of a sudden make them an active participant in class. It puts them to sleep.
Right.
So it makes the teacher's job easier because now the child has no energy to do anything.
Right.
So, yeah, you have no disruptions. You don't even have to worry about this kid because they're just doing nothing.
Right.
So, yeah. You know.
And he ends up going to Occidental. He wanted to go to Stanford. Basically, You look in the schools out west because he was clearly not going to be staying in New York where his parents were. He was ready to be out.
Yeah.
As for Sayon, and, you know, with Idris, you know, you can feel like he has that kind of upbringing and your question of like, what's the definition of how do you define blackness?
Mm-hmm.
Sayon is a Trinidadian.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
You know, practices karate. He was struggling in school early. Dalton was really kicking his butt early on. Said he was diagnosed with a learning disability early, pulling mm-hmm. all-nighters at age 11.
Mm-hmm.
At eighth grade, he was placed on academic watch at the school, which meant at some point, if he doesn't, there's a chance he may not be able to, quote unquote, move on
right.
to the high school level. So he doesn't. And he ends up going to a Benjamin Banneker public high school, which it seems like it's an all black school, like clearly by the name. And they teaching more things about being black. He gets a chance in high school to go to Africa.
Right.
At some point. In his high school, he loses his younger brother in an accident. You just see this. I mean, and he totally checks out.
Mm.
I mean, and it's sad. But, I mean, you knew it. You were like, he's going to struggle, which any of us would at that point. But,
right.
You know, you see at the end, he gets it together. earns his black belt, goes accepted to Fredonia, which is a I guess an art school. So they both had interesting turnouts. I mean, they both did well. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, graduated and moved on, went on to college. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting. And I watched some of, like, the afterwards where they, somebody interviewed the Idris's parents who mm-hmm. did the documentary. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the two things that I got out of from that video was there's this implicit bias mm-hmm. when it comes to other black children. Mm-hmm. And he said... Then he said, expect more and hug more. So kind of push your kids. Don't have them settle for just anything, but also hug more, which he wishes he showed his kid a little bit more love. So, great documentary.
Don't know when you'll be able to view it because it was up until March 6th, but we do some digging around on PBS called American Promise.
Yeah. So, thanks, Mr. Ash.
Yes, we appreciate you, sir. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sending us critiques and commentary, and we appreciate you sending us topics. That's keep right. them coming.
So, yes, please check us out. Send us the feedback. You can do it on Twitter, at Black Is Online, on Facebook at Black Is Magazine. You can email us. You can email KC at kc@blackisonline.com.
Yes.
You can email me at thebrotherslayman@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail, 323-455-4219. We love feedback. We can never get enough of it. So we'd love to hear from y'all.
Yes.
And before we move on to the other part of the podcast, I know we got a shout out an event coming up next week for our fellow Angelinos.
Yes. You all, Angelinos, know that KC is a woman of too many trades from time to time. But one of the things that I do is an event called SIP, a new after work experience. And we ran last year, 2013. This is actually our anniversary. We started in March 2013. And ran pretty much the remainder of the year. This year, we've decided to condense this event to spring and summer 2014. And our kickoff is next Thursday at the one and only Harold and Bell's restaurant on Jefferson, 2920 Jefferson Boulevard. The theme is tacos and tequila. Plus the tournament, because that's also the night that March Madness kicks off.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. And so we want to see you in the house. There is, of course, no charge for entry, but there is a happy hour menu and drinks that will run from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The original happy hour offerings for Harold and Bell's will run from the usual 4 to 7, but the sip menu will run all the way till 9. So we'd love to see beautiful people in the house coming to interact and mingle and check out what we're doing. SIP is an effort to bring together young professionals and support those businesses within the community that have supported us for so many years. Yes, we could go downtown and catch a drink. Yes, we could go to the West Side and catch a drink. But there are many bars right here in the hood with businesses that have been around for so long, feeding us and taking care of us. And so it's time that we take care of them and congregate in our own backyard. So
hang out with the fellow young professionals.
Yes. And we always have a lovely crowd. We don't get down with any ratchetness. So if you about that life, don't come to Harold and Bell's next Thursday. We don't want to see you.
You're probably going to be bored.
We will turn you out of doors. But if you are looking to mingle with, you know, a truly, you know, young crowd of professionals in all areas, all fields, all industries, this SIP is the place to be.
Beautiful people, y'all.
Yes, and I will be giving away tickets, if you can answer some of our black trivia, to Center Theater Group's production of The Tallest Tree in the Forest, which is about the life of the one and only Paul Robeson. And, Paul Robeson, there is no N in there. And one of my absolute favorite musicals, and mind you, I am not a fan of musicals at all, but this one is the best, and it's Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. My mother took me to see that when I was a kid, and I've loved it ever since. So both of those are playing from April to May at Center Theater Group. And come check us out. Come get on our mailing list so I can send you other hookups that we get that are only for SIP members.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a quick shout out to my line brothers, Darius and Scotty. Officially, I know this is coming out Friday, but today we officially 10 years ago crossed the burning sands.
Was it 10 years?
10 years today.
Wow.
So yeah, shout out to them, man. I'm glad I did that with y'all, man. I love y'all brothers, and hope y'all holding it down.
Yes. Love you both.
So we're getting into the break with KJ. This is part one. We'll probably put up the next one next week or so. But sit back and enjoy, y'all.
Peace.
Let me ask you guys this one, man. I read an article. I think it was Time Magazine. You may have seen it. And it says, I think like in 2050, this is what we're all going to look like. And it literally had a young lady, kind of your complexion,
mm-hmm.
like green, bluish eyes, mm-hmm. really the kinky curly hair. And this is what we're all going to look like. What are your thoughts about that?
That's probably true.
Okay.
I think that part of this quote unquote post-racial society, I think our youth are more desensitized to race than our generation is.
Oh, definitely.
And so the idea of dating people of different races is really no big deal at all whatsoever. So I think that the number of interracial marriages will definitely increase.
Mm-hmm.
I think just based off of numbers, there are more people of color than there are white people mm-hmm. on the continent. So quite frankly, they're going to die out, but numbers wise,
they'll make sure they don't.
Yeah. It'll be,
well, there are a few, you know, as long right. as you have the racist groups,
right.
You're still going to have right. Someone that believes that they're right. solely white. But I guarantee you, if they really trace it back,
it's a
drop of Negro
in there somewhere.
We'll find it.
Yeah. They'll try to keep it as pure as possible, but that population will get very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And I think between Blacks and Hispanics getting together, Blacks and Asians, like everybody getting with Black people.
Yeah.
Cause did we do a podcast on that, baby? That little, that internet dating thing that came out, and it was
a little bit, but I think you remember the stats.
Yeah. It was basically like nobody wanted Black women when it came to dating, but a lot of people wanted white men. And black men too, if I'm not mistaken.
It seemed like it was high. It was like, the Asian men were the lowest.
And Asian women were the highest. Everybody wanted an Asian woman. Mm. Nobody.
The Asian woman was the highest. The black woman
were the lowest.
Lowest.
Yeah, I had that phase too.
Yeah.
I went through my little phase.
Everybody goes through it.
Especially in the Navy in San Diego. It's kind of like, the hell, why not?
Why not?
Yeah, and it was like the white man, I think, was the highest, and then the Asian man was the lowest.
Yeah.
I think, like,
something like that. But I think men of color are definitely, because it's not just black men that are coveted now, mm-hmm. like Hispanic men, Asian men, like depending.
Latin men.
Yeah, they do. Men of color. I've seen a lot of Indian men getting a lot of love too and doing a lot of marrying outside of their culture.
Mm-hmm. Which is strange in itself.
Different.
Not strange. Let me say, take that back. Not strange, but
different.
It's just very different. You know, because I'm very used to seeing Indian and Indian.
Yeah, like we don't
Indian
do
and
this.
White woman, it's like,
What you doing?
Where'd that come from?
What are you doing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm seeing that a lot too. And like the darker Indian dudes.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. The real chocolatey ones booing up with the white women, like, wow, mm-hmm. all right. Okay.
Yeah, I had a work study that was with me, and he was born and raised in some part of Africa. He was married to a Swedish woman,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, "Wow!" I was like, "Was it hard for you?" He was like, "Nope, I just ignored everybody." And I was like, "You know what, man?" I said, "If that worked for you, then go with it."
Right.
And I think sometimes you have to take the mentality of, "Hey, this is who I love. I can give a fuck what you think.
Right. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't really
matter. That's what matters at the end of the day. I'm like, if you're just like, hey, it's just all about finding somebody who loved me mm-hmm. and this person, you know, we connected and I just went from there. Hey, that's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like people who are like, yeah, this person who looks like me but is the opposite sex, no.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're just counting them all out to begin with. They ain't even on the checklist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I said, I do have a problem with black women that are just like, I don't mess with black men.
Vice versa.
Yeah, and vice versa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it like this. I went through a phase because of where I grew up and how I grew up. People said I did white people things, and I did, I surf.
Okay.
I bodyboard. I ride horses. My mom made
That's American shit.
Yeah. My mom was like, my mom's rule was if they're doing it, you're going to do it too.
Mm.
That was her rule.
Okay.
Like, there's nothing that they can do better than you.
Right.
So I did all that stuff.
Right.
And when I got into getting older, you know, black women were like, well, it's kind of white. And I was like, well, what does it mean? What does that mean, white? Define that for me.
Right.
It's fun for me. So, and then as I got a little bit older, you know, joined the military, and I actually had black women tell me, I would never date you because you do this. And I went through a phase of where I didn't mess with black women.
You're like, I'm good.
I'm good. Because it was so many of them at that point in my life. And so that's why I started dating other races. And they were like, hey, you know, I take you to where you are. Matter of fact, let's go together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
once I got a little bit older and I stepped outside of that, okay, well, this is what I like to do. Married to Chanel, beautiful sister with dreadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, surfboard. Anyways.
I did catch that. On that
I know, show. But she did. She did.
I totally caught it.
She didn't catch it. But she was just like, you know, hey, I get who you are. Do you? And I'm happy with what you come home and what you bring me. And
that's what's up.
I was like, mm-hmm. there it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'll be marrying you at noon tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah. You know, before you change your mind, back out.
Because that's all you want. I mean, it's like if you're in an area where you can do that kind of stuff, it's mm-hmm. not, it's like, because I like to swim, and I'd be damned if I had met, I have never met a sister like that before, but I didn't met a sister like, oh, you swim? You know, because I mm-hmm. told them, black people don't swim. I'm like, so basically what you're saying is, right, I'm like, oh, so you basically saying you don't want a community pool in your community. Is that what you're telling me?
Mm-hmm.
Chris is a fish.
Yeah, it's like, why don't you want to swim? It's just like, because you ain't by the water, or like, what the fuck? Like, you
I was see- that kid that went to the beach. And, you know, those buoys that were miles and miles out, I was out there next to those. That was what we did. Like, you know, it was nothing for us to be out there in the middle of the ocean and see a school of dolphins go right past us.
Like, yes.
That was perfect. I sit on my board,
mm-hmm.
and that was perfect for me. That was heaven at that point, at that age. So, I get it, bro.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I have cousins who have done, you know, horseback riding, you know,
mm-hmm.
Camille's family, you know, mm-hmm. and putting them in an equestrian. I'm like, oh, okay, you can do that.
That's it.
Cool. I was like, to me, it's all about exposure. You mm-hmm. got to expose them. If you keep them in this stupid, like, well, black people only do this, I'm like,
and then
they ain't going to see limiting. Nothing.
Exactly. And they stay in their stupid little neighborhoods, and they never go past Las Vegas, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know nothing else past right. that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're in the South, they never go past Texas,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, exposure is the biggest thing. Yeah. I've skydived. I know you're probably thinking, you're crazy.
No, I wanted to
no,
do that.
No, we both want to.
Oh, oh let me tell you.
She's starting to get on it now. I was like, I want to do that before I die.
Excuse me, I've been on wanting to skydive.
Really? Get it. let me say this. It is such a feeling.
A rush.
I mean, it was like euphoric for me. You're falling, and it's just like, wow. If this chute don't open, I'm fucked.
Like, this is it.
Like, what's it all?
This is it.
Take it all
what's
in.
What's it all unravels? It's like, oh, yeah. It was fun. But yeah, I definitely recommend you do that at least once. I want to do it again, but Chanel's kind of like,
yeah, right. There's
we
only
need
a,
you.
There's only a couple of things that I'm not down to do.
What's that?
I'm not down to bungee jump.
Done that. Great.
I'm cool on it.
I don't want to drop with something. I don't want to drop face down with something holding me by my feet. And then,
yeah, I don't know about it. Yeah, I don't think I
had a blast.
And I'm cool on the mountain hiking thing, like with the sticks and the.
Are you talking about going like? But you talking about that's like in the snow? Like,
yeah, I'm cool on that. Mm-hmm. The idea of free falling without the parachute in any circumstance, I don't necessarily need to have that experience.
You can do rock climbing. I've done rock climbing one time.
Yeah, but rock climbing
like,
is cool,
right? But yeah, I didn't go like way the hell.
No,
like,
no, no, no.
You
no,
just
no.
go up like, oh, this is cool. And you're like, all right, I'm ready to come back down now.
Complete amateur. That's what I did.
Right. I don't need to do none. I'm good on that.
It's like skiing. You don't want to just ski.
No. I don't think I need to ski. I will toboggan. I will inner tube.
I'm an avid snowboarder.
There you go. But I probably will not ski. I have bad hand-eye coordination. I'd probably go out.
It's
like
not as
bummer.
Bad. You know what happened?
Oh, damn.
You know what happened? When
bring it up.
I think you gave up. You saying. Gave up when what's the name?
Natasha Richardson?
Who? Yeah. What was that?
Liam Neeson's wife.
Was that Liam Neeson's wife? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not.
Yep,
not,
that was accident number two.
She
I was
just
like,
fell
you know,
and hit her head, and then
and she was like, good. And then an hour later, she was dead. I was like, yeah, see that would be me. I would be the one to take the trip and fall, and then be like, I'm good, and then dead in 2 hours.
Oh man,
I'm too clumsy.
I took Chanel for our. When we first got married on our honeymoon, we went up snowboarding.
Hey,
and she. Fell so fucking hard, like when I say she rolled, like I looked up at her and she was just like, okay, this works. This would still work. I just was like, all right, let's just go back to the cabin because you look pretty
you beat up right
call
now
the night. Yeah, but real talk though, I mean in regards to race, culture, ethnicity, whatever you want to call it, I think everyone's going to be just this one set color eventually as well. I think it's going to come down to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there's so many mixed kids, mixed couples that are looking to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to have a look. You may have a, like Chris just said, a few people that are like, oh, we're diehard, this is what we're going to stay. But I guarantee you, if you trace it back, we'll find something in there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Indian or if it's black, whatever, we'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, you know, whether I'm here or not, only good Lord knows,
mm-hmm.
2050, maybe 2075, it's a damn good chance that we're all going to look a certain way.
A little
and
different.
That'll be it.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a few variations as far the curvature of your eyes or something mm-hmm. like that because you have some Asian in your family,
mm-hmm.
but we're all going to look the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that is a positive.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be very much, and I'm still not opposed to black people connecting and keeping black love and black families alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with people making choices, of course, in love with somebody, making a choice based on the person first,
mm-hmm.
and not being so concerned about race or ethnicity
mm-hmm.
as being their guide.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's possible that the person that's for you is not within your particular group. And if you pigeonhole yourself to that group,
mm-hmm.
you might be shortchanging yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I think you can probably still find somebody who gives you what you desire. You know, like if you what you desire is chocolate, well, it's not just black people that come in brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
exactly.
You just look for brown in a different group.
You got Indian and
yeah.
all kind of things going on.
The question is if those people respond to us. And I think that's the part that is scary for me. Because there was definitely some research that came out a few years ago that said the two groups that are most likely to be single are Asian men and black women. And I think for both groups, it has to do with popular stereotypes about both. Asian men are often, you know, since we're so hung up on penis size in this country, and I'm not going to say size don't matter, but the idea, you know, they're tiny, they're small, they're little men, da 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 da. And that particular stereotype being pushed, not to mention so many Asian women date outside their race. Yes. Like so many. So mm-hmm. many are just, I'm not ever going to marry a Japanese, a Chinese, a Vietnamese, a Filipino. They always are dating somebody outside their race. Mm-hmm. And then with black women, I mean, shit, television has us all looking crazy and mouthy and gorgeous. We all look wonderful.
Hell yeah.
But the moment we open our mouths, nobody wants to deal with all that sass. Yeah. And so,
and that is a problem.
Yeah. So those people don't want to deal with that. So, and people automatically believe you. I mean, if you show a man even a little bit of attitude, all of a sudden you are now just like every chick on television. And so I think,
well, that's a weak ass dude then.
That is a weak ass, but there's a lot of weak ass dudes. There's a lot of,
there's a lot of dudes
that
weakness have, right there.
They've never had true interactions. Mm-hmm. They've never had real interactions. And so because of that, for whatever reason, it just, I don't know. I hope sisters and Asian men too don't want y'all to be left out in the cold. I wish y'all could hook up together, but hey.
That's part of us. You know, I get tired of brothers claiming this crap and not liking sisters, where it's like, I'm tired of seeing these stories of children who, like, I hate it when it's this issue that either one of them has. And I'm like, please, please do not give me this story of, well, I didn't have my father in my life. I'm like, oh, fuck, really? The same story? Yeah. It's not. And you're just like, I'm tired of brothers complaining. It's like, well, clearly, there's been a lot of us men who abandon the children, and then the cycle continues, and you're like, well, I don't understand why men are like, well, you weren't there. You weren't there to raise your son, to teach him right. You weren't there for your daughter to show her what a real man is, so they're going to take it out on their peer group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Or learn a way that is not even acceptable in any form.
Mm-hmm.
Behaviors. Who are they getting their behaviors from? Young boys, if you don't have a father, mm-hmm. they get it from their mothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to go on to that. You know where
can.
I want to go with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can.
You know, God, it's just, you know, it's.
I know where you want to go, but even before you get to that point, men who just have effeminate behavior.
Yes.
That bitch assness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's my word. You bitch assness.
That bitch assness in men is an issue.
It mm-hmm. is very much so an issue for me.
It's so unattractive.
Yeah. I look at some of these men and I'm just like, you know, I've seen pictures. I guess I saw a new rap artist coming out. The brother was wearing high heels, I guess. And I'm just like, what? And then, you know, Kanye wearing a skirt. It's like, we're promoting the bullshit when it all comes down to it. I'm not anti-gay. Please don't get me wrong. I'm anti-bullshit. That's my problem.
Yeah.
I got no problem with if you say you love this person, cool, man. Have a great life. Because if you can find somebody to wake up every morning with your stinking ass breath and still say I love you, and it just happens to be two dudes, man, push on.
Right.
That's just how I feel.
Right.
But I get upset when young men, especially particular black men, don't have a father figure in their life. And they tend to gravitate towards the women in their life. And then naturally, I think it becomes an issue of, well, if you know, if this is good enough for mama, it's good enough for me in all aspects of life.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And I know that sounds crazy, but that's just my mentality.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to teach my sons, hey, you know, some people live their lives like this. My Chanel and I have really close gay friends.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest son has figured it out. He's not stupid. He was like, I said, hey, buddy. I said, you know, Uncle Ray and his friend are going to come over. He said, his boyfriend? I said, yeah. He's like, okay. He understands. He's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you like boys or girls? He said, I like girls, daddy. I'm like, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
He understands.
Yeah.
But to not have the conversation, to not say that the bullshit doesn't exist because real fathers aren't there is asinine to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when I'm thinking about it, because, yeah, homosexuality and homophobia are huge issues in our community.
Oh, much
Black so. People tend to be homophobic. I feel like it's actually one of our weaknesses as a community, because we have a tendency to shun a large group of men in particular. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is the conversation doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. It becomes a taboo topic. We don't talk about it. We ostracize those men. Mm-hmm. They then in turn turn to something else mm-hmm. to have a sense of family and unity, because family, real family, is not dealing with them or accepting them or just even having the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it can end tragically.
Yeah.
You know, you got a lot of sons out there on the street doing all kinds of things because they can't talk to daddy. They can't talk to mommy yep. about what the situation mm-hmm. is. And even if parents don't get it or don't like it, they have a hard time separating. This is my child. You know what I mean? I still love my child, even if I don't agree with what choice they're making. But even before that, the bitch assness I'm talking about mm-hmm. is those men that really want to be catered to. Like they're women, like the chivalry has all of a sudden flipped the script. When I see men tweeting or Facebooking crazy shit about what they want women to do and what women need to step up and do and, you know, what's your money looking like? And then what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is this coming from? And is do we not like I'm somebody who's all right with bending social roles because I feel like people should work to their strengths. So
if work together.
Right. And if you're the better cook in the house and you're the guy, then great. You know,
if she's
better at balancing the books, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to follow a set rule in regards to that. Work to your strengths. But some of these men, I mean, it's the emotional immaturity that mm-hmm. that bugs me. It's the whininess. It's the. But I'm all good with a man crying, but the extra sensitivity to shit, like, I don't know. It's hard for me to explain. I've just come across some grown ass men who are still on the tit. And I'm like, word? Like, when are you going to really get grown? And you mm-hmm. want to sit here and complain about all these black women are what they doing and not doing for you, but you're still on the tit. Do you mm-hmm. realize you are still on the tit? That's yeah. part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Chanel will tell you, when I first met Chanel, my mom, I had just gotten divorced. I was still going through my divorce, actually. Mm. And, of course, my mom could not stand my first wife. Let's go ahead and just let that be known. Anyways. Okay. But, you know, Chanel was basically told my mom in a nice future daughter-in-law kind of way, that is my man. I will take care of him. Thank you very much. And that did not sit well.
With your mom.
Did not sit well. No. No. But, you know, bitch assness, I think couples need to work together.
Yes.
That's a major issue in itself. You don't work together. And I'm guilty of that to a certain degree because mm-hmm. I kind of fell into that. Well, I'm the dude and this is what I do. And I realize I have to be a nurturing father. I mean, I have two young men mm-hmm. that I'm raising mm-hmm. and they need to see me loving on mommy. Mm-hmm. My son, the other day I was kissing Chanel. He was like, unnecessary. That's what he said. My 6-year-old said, unnecessary. And I was like, how you think you got here?
Right.
Now go to your room.
Exactly.
But you know, you need to have those, they need to see that.
Yeah.
They need to see, you know, tapping mommy on the booty a little bit. I think it's within respectful. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Not just groping, but you know, you have a little love yeah. tap. Nothing yeah. wrong with that.
It's, they do.
Yeah.
You have to show them your emotion mm-hmm. as a father too. So you have to show them, like, you know, I wouldn't, if my son is upset and crying, if he has a legit reason why he's crying, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, why are you crying? But I'm not going to be like, stop crying, damn it. I'm like, there are going to be times where it's just emotions going to hit. You need to let it out. Let it out. Like,
that's it.
So what?
And
you know, you crying.
And
if there's a woman who's like, I don't like you when you're crying, then peace, chick. Be home. Like,
yeah. Like, I wasn't raised that way.
No, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you can get emotional too. You just got to, you can't just get all the way emotional.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you got to learn, like, you at a certain point, I guess the guy's like, all right, let me pull it back. I can let it out. All right, let me pull it back in and just go from there. But sons have to see, like, it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to get you. If you're hurt, you can be hurt. You ain't got to act tough 24/7. That's not, you're going to go crazy. You're going to lose it. You're going to die early of a damn stroke, heart condition, because you trying to be big and boss all the time. And you just let this anger control you all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, society. Now we done spun out people into a whole different conversation. Did we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Black Is Break. Is the topic is everything. when we think of society and black males specifically, the whole hype of, you know, you got to be an alpha male, you got to, you know, peacock and all that kind of stuff. One, that doesn't come natural to everybody. Everybody don't have that personality. Two, you know, showboating people every now and again, they got their own insecurities. It's a reason why you need to be the center of attention all the damn time. And that's sometimes
always said that
not positive. You know what I mean? It's not always a good thing. I love the fact, and that's one thing, Chris, in my relationship, because out of the two of us, I have the more outgoing personality. But when you're somebody like me, you need somebody like a Chris. My husband is the observer. Whereas I'm talking and not paying attention to shit, he's the one who sees somebody creeping in with a gun.
Yeah.
And will make sure I duck. You know, and like that type of balance is necessary. And I feel like we don't often, we push on to kids or are, how can I say this? I feel like society has pushed on to us what it is we're supposed to do. So if you're a man, here are the things you need to be showcasing in order to get a woman. If you're a woman, here are the things you need to do to attract a man versus people just saying, this is who I am. This is who you are. Do they blend? Yeah, they do. Can we work together? Yeah, we can. Okay, let's try to make that work. You know, versus, because I think that's where people fall short in relationships and in marriages, trying to be people who they are not.
And yeah, I have to agree 100%.
And being completely uncomfortable in the space. But then back to the point, I flipped all over the place. Back to the point with you guys and showing the kids affection. Yeah, that's necessary. We hug around here all the time. Our son has created a term called love sandwiches. That's where the three of us hug. We're the bread and he's whatever's in the middle.
No, he just needs he'll just ask sometimes out the blue. And we just go, can I get a love sandwich? Like, okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, can't deny the man that.
Comes in, he wants his hug. If he sees Chris and I cuddling, it's his job to break that up. And get right in the middle so he can get him some. He's I'm supposed to be right here cuddling with both of y'all.
And it's just, you know.
I love that he's affectionate.
I do too. I love the fact that he understands. He's cool saying I love you back, you know, to us. I didn't do that as a kid a lot. Kim does that and says it a lot. So I'm like, that's good.
Yeah, I was that kid.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
A little different for me. My dad is, definitely said he loved me. Ex-Marine.
Okay.
So a little different.
Okay.
a little different. But okay. Yeah, my dad loved us. It was just crazier.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. My granny said nobody in the family said they loved each other until I was born. And she's like, I don't know where you got it from. She said, but you would tell all of us that you loved us. And we were like, well, she's a baby. We can't tell the baby. We got to say something to the baby. She says she loves us.
Got
to
reply. Yeah. It's a baby.
But she was like, yeah, I don't know where you got that from. She said, but you kind of started that whole I love you in this family, which is interesting to me. Our families, we don't share that sentiment with each other. Families in general. I don't think that's specific to black people. I just think people don't show emotion. That fear of vulnerability.
People just scared of it. Like, well, if you tell your damn kid you love them, like, getting a hug. It's certain situations, you know, like we went off and we saw The Butler and that scene where his son going off to college. And I was holding in because I totally wanted to yell at the screen, hug your damn son.
Still haven't seen that one yet, but I'm waiting on Blu-ray. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But it's just the moments where you can tell, the moment's there, like, it's okay. Like, he needs to know that you care. Like, I can show you effects. I ain't going to be tough and like, oh, there's people around. I don't care. You my son, damn it.
That's it.
Like, I love you. Yeah. Hey, if the world... Say whatever the world want to say about your ass. I love you.